Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives, sharing their expertise and life stories, making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. Well, today we're talking about the Lincoln Conspiracy. It's a story few people know of, one that's set in a time of deep political division in America. And my guests say it shows us what good leaders can do in times of strife, perfectly on point for where our country is today. So who's my guest? It's Brad Meltzer. He's been on the show many times before, and I'm always thrilled to have him back. He's a great conversationalist. He makes things so interesting, and he's a pretty awesome writer. Today, we're talking, as I said, about The Lincoln Conspiracy, which is a nonfiction book, but it actually reads like a thriller. It's very fast-paced and packed full of really great, fascinating stories. So, let me tell you a little bit more about Brad. He's the number one New York Times bestselling author of The Escape Artist and many other bestselling thrillers, as well as the Ordinary People Change the World series. He's also the host of the History Channel TV shows Brad Meltzer's Decoded and Brad Meltzer's Lost History, which he used to help find the missing 9/11 flag the firefighters raised at Ground Zero. He co-authored this book with Josh Mensch. Josh is a New York Times bestselling author and documentary television producer with a focus on American history and culture. He co-authored the first conspiracy, The Secret Plot to Kill George Washington, with Brad Meltzer. And for television, Josh has written, directed, and been a showrunner on nonfiction series for the History Channel, PBS, National Geographic, and many other networks. And again, today we're talking about the book they co-authored, The Lincoln Conspiracy, The Secret Plot to Kill America's 16th President, and Why It Failed. And here's my guest, Brad Meltzer. So welcome, Brad Meltzer. Welcome, welcome, welcome back.
Oh, it's good to be back. You know how much I love chatting with you.
Well, this is an awesome book, and I say that with all sincerity. I was never particularly interested in Abraham Lincoln, to be quite honest, and now I'm fascinated by him. So job well done there, I think, that to you and Josh. I know that, you know, we're talking today about the Lincoln Conspiracy, the secret plot to kill America's 16th president and why it failed. I know you've collaborated with Josh Mensch before. Why did you want to do this particular project together?
You know, I think for us, it allowed us not just to tell, and let's be clear about what it's about, right? Because I'll give a context. We all know how John Wilkes Booth ended Abraham Lincoln's presidency, but this was the opportunity to tell the story of the first secret plot to kill Abraham Lincoln before the presidency even began. And the reason we were interested in it is because it wasn't just, you know, it's very titillating for me to say, hey, we found the secret plot to kill Abraham Lincoln. But what was far more interesting was this was a time as the Civil War was about to explode. America was cut into basically two parts. Each side hated the other. Whatever side you were on, you thought the other side were horrible, awful people. Does that sound familiar to you?
Oh, somewhat.
Right? Somewhat. And that, for us, was what was important because it allowed us to show what great leaders do in that situation. And Abraham Lincoln doesn't come in and, you know, meet everyone with his fist and yell at everybody. Abraham Lincoln meets people with an open heart and an open mind. And what he does in that moment is he doesn't choose to divide us, but he chooses to unite us. That's what great leaders do. So in addition to the secret plot to kill him, we got to tell it in a much bigger way that really does matter and impact today.
Yes, and I think there are a lot of lessons to take away from this story. So let's take a deeper look at the story. It starts in 1861. It's just days before his inauguration, and he's traveling on a train from Philadelphia to Washington, D.C. in the middle of the night. So there are rumors that somebody's out to kill him, but he doesn't really buy into that until a certain point, right?
Yeah, so and let's talk about the actual plot so we know. To get from when to be sworn in as America's 16th president, Abraham Lincoln has to take a train. And the ride is from his home in Springfield, Illinois, to Washington, D.C. But the only way to get there is you had to go through Baltimore. And the problem was Maryland at the time was a slave state. So the plot to kill him was very simple. A secret society was planning to ambush Abraham Lincoln and kill him when he came through Baltimore, ending his presidency before it ever began. So you'll see, as you just said, you know, you're on a train speeding in the middle of the night. On this train, there are lots of passengers. We care about three of them. There's a businessman, there's a woman, and there's her invalid brother. But none of them are who they say they are. The businessman is actually famed detective Alan Pinkerton. The woman is Kate Warren, America's first female private eye, who we must talk more about. But her so-called brother is not her brother, and he's certainly not an invalid. That's Abraham Lincoln. He's in disguise. They give him a code name, and they put him on this train to make sure the secret society can't get him. And I just ruined chapter one of the Lincoln conspiracy, but now you know kind of exactly what we're talking about.
Right. Well, how did you come across this story? Because it isn't a popular story, as you said, and you've done intensive, you and Josh did intensive research on this. How did you first come across this story?
Yeah, you know, this was at one moment in time, and it begs the question, right? Why do we not know this story? But when it happened, it was the most famous story in the country. It was the front page of the paper. But then a few days later, the Civil War exploded. And 4 years later, Abraham Lincoln took a bullet to his brain. So this story became a footnote, but not to us. And I first, I think, came on my radar when I was working with the History Channel doing our TV show Decoded. And it was there, we did an episode on the Lincoln assassination, but it was there where I kind of, you know, I think I heard about it for the first time. But I only had kind of the edges of the puzzle, you know, just the kind of flat parts. I didn't have the picture in the middle. And it wasn't until we had done last year, which we spoke about, was the first conspiracy, the secret plot to kill George Washington. And when we were trying to follow that up, we thought, you know what, how do you top George Washington but with Abraham Lincoln? So the Lincoln conspiracy was born.
So you just mentioned Kate Warren, the first female detective with Pinkerton, with anybody, first female detective. I want to talk a little bit about Alan Pinkerton and Kate Warren because, you know, without them, obviously, there wouldn't have been a book because it would have been a whole different book, right?
Yeah, you know, and let's talk about the Pinkertons. Alan Pinkerton, to start with, is a guy from Chicago, eventually moves to Chicago, wants to fight crime, but sees that the Chicago police, some of them are corrupt. So he hangs out his own shingle to be a private eye. And he creates the Pinkerton National Detective Agency, puts his logo as a big, giant, open eyeball with a note under that says, "We never sleep." And that's where, supposedly, America gets the word private eye from.
Private
the eye is the eye in Alan Pinkerton's sign, which is incredible.
Yeah, love it.
And I love that idea. And one day, Alan Pinkerton is working, and a 26-year-old girl comes into his office. And this woman says to him, "I saw your ad for a private eye in the newspaper. I want to be that private eye." Now, this is a time, right? It's like in the 1850s, no one is hiring a female private eye, much less a woman in law enforcement. But Kay Warren is like, "I want the job." And he's like, "You should be the secretary. Why do you want to be a detective?" And she says, "You know, people talk to me. Women talk to me. I talk to wives better than you do. And most important, men brag to me. They tell me things to impress me. Men are stupid." and he realizes, to his credit, she's absolutely right, that there are men who are going to talk to her in ways they will never talk to him. And Alan Pinkerton's great power as a private detective is that he infiltrates your life. He finds out, Vicki, what restaurants you go to, what bars you frequent, what your drink is at that bar, who your friends are, and then he'll go into that bar, wait for you to come in. Before you order your drink, he'll already have that drink that you love, and he'll order it before you, and you'll go, "Oh my gosh, that's my drink too." And you'll go, "Oh wow, you're new in town? Yes. Oh, I'm here visiting such and such a friend," he says. And you go, I know that person." And now you suddenly think you have a new friend. And you don't realize the whole thing is a setup.
Right.
And it sounds obvious now, but that's, you know, back then they didn't watch 50 episodes of Law and Order.
Right.
No idea that someone was doing that to them. So Alan Pinkerton is a detective and Kate Warren is a detective. They infiltrate. They are like termites. They grind their way into your life. They eat the big support column and the whole building crumbles around you. And that, these are the people who were hired to search out the plot to kill Abraham Lincoln.
Right. Interesting. So can we talk about the people who did set out to kill him? Because they were, there was a secret group from Baltimore, and they were white supremacists. They just didn't, they didn't want his presidency at any cost.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. They were, it was an offshoot of a secret society called the Knights of the Golden Circle. And to tell you what they really wanted in life, the Knights wanted, I know it sounds silly, but a golden circle. They wanted a physical place in the southern part of the United States, bits of Mexico and the Caribbean, make a big circle around them. And they called that their golden circle. They wanted a place where slavery would thrive forever. They thought if you were white, you were superior to someone who was black, and they saw Abraham Lincoln as a great threat to slavery, so therefore he became public enemy number one. And these were the men who just at all costs wanted to stop him.
He did not have an easy start to his presidency at all, did he? Because, I mean, he'd got this, you know, his, he has this plot to try and kill him on the way to his inauguration. He's like literally just a couple of weeks, I think 3 days after he got sworn in, is when the South, or he got news that he was going to have to make a very tough decision about, do I go into the South or, you know, do I surrender to them? I mean, it, right from the get-go, his presidency was really difficult.
Yeah, you know, and it really struck me, because we all look at Abraham Lincoln as like, oh, he's one of the greatest presidents we've ever had. You don't realize how much hatred there was for him.
Yeah.
Abraham Lincoln is so hated that 10 different states wouldn't even put him on the ballot in the South, even though he was the rightful nominee. So no votes were cast in many states for him, not a single vote. They just acted like he wasn't there, which is unheard of, right? It's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was so hated that 3 days after he's elected, South Carolina passes a resolution saying they're going to secede from the Union. By the time he's sworn in, between the time where he's elected and sworn in, 6 different states have decided that they've already seceded from the Union. And that doesn't even mention the fact that the hate mail starts, the death threat starts, and there's a credible, real secret plot to kill him. And yet, despite all of this, what's so amazing to me is Abraham Lincoln rides into town and raises his right hand and gives his inaugural address. And you know what he says? Despite all this hatred, all this venom, he says in his first inauguration, he says, we should be friends, not enemies. He says, we should defer to the better angels of our nature. And God, do I love that. I love that he pushes us to the better angels of our nature.
Yeah, we could certainly do with a little of that right now.
Right? I mean, it's just, but that's what's so important. You know, I think one of the things that we need to do, and the mistake we make with our heroes, is we take our heroes so often these days, and we build these grand statues of them, and then we worship at their feet, and we do them a huge disservice. Because, you know, we all know Abraham Lincoln at the end of his story. We know him when he passes the Emancipation Proclamation, and slavery ends, and the Civil War is won. That's the end. That's the end of the story. That's when he's the great man.
Yeah.
I love the fact that when you read this story, it's the beginning of his story. So you see Abraham Lincoln making mistakes and doubting himself and not knowing if he can pull it off. When he gets the nomination, you know what he's doing? He's in an alleyway playing handball. He goes to, before he leaves for Washington, D.C., one of the last things he does is he goes home. He wants to see his father's grave, and he wants to say goodbye to his stepmother, who he loves and adores. She's still alive, and she has this moment where they hug each other, and she's saying goodbye to him, and she starts crying, saying, I'm worried he's going to be assassinated. I'm worried that I'm never going to see him again. And she's absolutely right. But when you see these human moments, you realize Abraham Lincoln is just like the rest of us. Anyone you look up to, whether it's Abraham Lincoln or Rosa Parks or George Washington or anyone else, they have moments where they're scared and they're terrified and they don't know if they can go on. And when you see that, you're reminded that they, like all of us, we are all scared and we are brave and we are terrified and we are amazing. Some of us within the same few days, some of us within the same few minutes, especially these days. And that's not a bad thing. That's what makes us human. And when you read as a book, The Lincoln Conspiracy, I hope that that's the most important thing you take away from it. It's just, you know, the depth of your own power.
Yeah, and I, as I said at the beginning, I'd never been particularly interested in Abraham Lincoln, and there were so many more layers to him than I thought. And reading this book, which reads like a novel almost, you saw the depth of some of those layers. He was not an easy man. He was a complicated man on some levels. I read that he was very, very prone to depression, and at one point was very prone to outbursts of intense rage. And he thinks probably, and history thinks probably, that was because of the medication he was taking for his depression. But he had the fortitude to look at that objectively and stop taking that medication, the blue mass. And so he was not a perfect person, but he's very human in the book. And I think you guys did a really good job of that.
You know, and I appreciate that. It's the best compliment we can get, and the reviews for the book have been stunning for us. And I think it's what everyone keeps writing, two things they keep saying about the book is, one, it reads like a thriller because the action just keeps coming so fast, and two, you see Abraham Lincoln like a human being. You know, you literally see the moment where he brings his son, because he's like, hey, my son's in Harvard, I want him to come, I'm going to be sworn in as president. And what's his son doing? He's trying to meet girls and have a lot of drinks, and then they lose the inaugural address.
Right.
They literally lose it. I mean, these are human moments, because I think if you woke up most people in the middle of the night and you shook them at 3 o'clock in the morning and woke them up and said, tell me about Abraham Lincoln, they would literally blurt out, free the slaves, big hat. They would blurt out things like, you know, Emancipation Proclamation, lived in a log cabin. Like, those are all the things we should know that are beaten to our heads when we're in high school. But that doesn't tell you who he is as a man. That doesn't tell you who he is as a person. It tells you who he is as a politician, certainly.
Right.
And it was very vital for us that you get to see, you know, one of my favorite moments in the book is a very human moment where you see Abraham Lincoln told for the very first time that there's a plot to kill him. And it's in the middle of the night. Lincoln is exhausted. He's back at the hotel, and he's been shaking hands all day. And Alan Pinkerton says, sir, you know, there's this plot. We have a credible threat to kill you. We want to do our best to protect you. You have an event in Philadelphia tomorrow. Let's skip the event. I'm going to go to Philadelphia instead. I'm going to save your life. I'm going to skip Philadelphia, I should say. I'm going to save your life. Get you to Washington faster. And Abraham Lincoln says, I'm not missing the event in Philadelphia. And they're like, what? Why? You know what he's doing in Philadelphia the next day? Abraham Lincoln the next day is supposed to be in Philadelphia to raise a flag in honor of the birthday of one of his heroes, a man named George Washington. And no way is Abraham Lincoln missing George Washington's birthday party. Mm. And he goes the next day, sure enough, shows up in Philadelphia, risks to his own life. And God bless Josh Mensch, my co-writer on this book. He actually tracked down the speech that Abraham Lincoln gives that day. And at Independence Hall in Philadelphia, where the Declaration of Independence was signed, Abraham Lincoln says that it's, you know, everyone should have an equal chance in America. And he says, and these are his real words, he says, if we can't save the country without giving up that principle, and then Abraham Lincoln pauses and says, I was about to say, I would rather be assassinated on this spot than surrender.
Yes, yes.
I love the fact that Abraham Lincoln knows in that moment that there's a plot to kill him. And soon after that moment is when he's whisked away. I won't ruin it because it'll ruin the fun, but you'll see how they get him out of there. You'll see how they potentially save his life.
Right, right. But
again, these are just human, real moments.
Right. He faced an awful lot of loss as a child. I mean, he came from very, very poor, humble beginnings. He must have had a great determination inside of him. And he goes through all of this loss, and then he loses one of his own children from typhoid, from the White House water, they think, from the Potomac River. How do you think that shaped him?
Well, listen, we talk about this in the book, but Abraham Lincoln, it's like, you know, he buries his mother, buries his sister, buries sons. You know, the horror of all horrors. It just seems like the specter of death is wherever he is. In fact, Lincoln himself at one point has a vision of his own death. He has this dream where he's, you know, his face is divided in half in a mirror, and one side looks one way and one side looks the other. And one of the things that he says is he predicts that this particular dream means he's going to die during his first term in office. He's going to be killed. And he's absolutely wrong about the timing, but he's absolutely right about the end result. And how does it shape you? I mean, to me, I think for most people, it would make you depressed. It would make you, you know, hate the world. It would make you think, you know, as you said before, his depression or whatever he was suffering through should overtake him, right? You'd think it would just knock him down. But there's something in Abraham Lincoln. And I don't know, sometimes when you go through horrible, you know, you can have people go through tons of disasters, but one will come out completely positive, one will come out negative. Abraham Lincoln, his whole life, what strikes me is he has an outlook that looks out for others. Not more worried about his own success, not more worried about his own mortality. He almost blows past all of that about himself and just realizes that his life is meant to be for others. And that is what strikes me about him, that all of that, I think kind of reminds him of what's really important.
Yeah, and I love that in the back of the book. I read that, Brad, that you said Lincoln's greatest attribute, even when the country was bitterly divided and it would be easy for him to make decisions based on self-interest, Abraham Lincoln always reaches for the light and tries to help others, which truly is what we expect from our public servants, right?
We expect it. We're not getting it right now, right? I mean, we're just not. But we need to. And if you don't demand it, you're not going to get it. I know that for sure. And I think it's why Abraham Lincoln's so important right now. You know, I can tell you lots of stories from the past, but why do they matter today? And I think anyone who reads this book sees very quickly the power of ordinary people and the power of looking out for others, the power, as you said, of reaching for the light. One of my other favorite moments in the whole book is this story. You know, Abraham Lincoln, when he's elected, is actually clean-shaven. You know, and this little girl, an 11-year-old girl.
I love this story. I love this story. Go ahead.
And, this 11-year-old girl named Grace Bedell writes him a letter, a fan letter, and says, "Here, you know, dear Mr. Lincoln, I see you're running for president." She says, "I'm like my brother's. Some are going to vote for you, some won't. But I want you to know that I think you do a lot better if you grew a beard." And Abraham Lincoln writes back to this girl and says, "You know what, Grace, I'm going to grow that beard." And you don't really know if he's going to grow the beard because of her or not. But he soon after starts growing his beard that you know and that you've seen, of course, in every picture of him.
Yeah.
And when he sees her, he actually runs into the girl when his train comes through her town. But when he sees her, he says, Grace, here's the beard I grew for you. And that's why America, that's why we get the most famous beard in American history is an 11-year-old girl who wrote a letter.
Yes, there are some amazing stories about him. And I want to talk about this one, too, because this, I mean, he was very slimly voted in. He won by a very slim margin. I read or heard somewhere when I was doing my research for a conversation that he was the first president ever to not be voted in by the slave owners. And he also was the president who introduced the press corps, because up until then, the president would choose his favorite newspaper and report to them, and then others would get the scratchings from that newspaper. So he actually introduced or founded the press corps, and that's something that's very much under attack today.
Listen, when you attack truth, that's of course what you're going to attack, and that's what we're having trouble with right now. And even Abraham, you know, the thing that was, I don't know if this is reassuring or terrifying, but, you know, when Abraham Lincoln, his life, it doesn't spoil the book to say we all know he lives from this event, right? He survives this assassination attempt. But the thing that is fascinating to me is, you know, he eventually gets and sneaks on a train in disguise, and you'll love the disguise when you see it, and you'll love the code names that they give him, so I won't spoil those. I know you know them. But the one thing that I love and I'm terrified by is that he sneaks into Washington, D.C. and avoids the bad guys, avoids the secret society trying to ambush him. But oddly, all the press takes him apart, you know, like half the press.
Yes.
Why'd you run? You should run. The president should run. American presidents should be strong. You should have never hid from those people that were trying to ambush you. And I'm just like, wow, it's exactly where we are today in the sense of no, you know, depending on your politics, decides how you view that situation. It tells you how to feel, how to think, who to hate. And I'm of course reassured by that, because I feel like, well, if they can get out of that and then the country still goes on, then we should too. And then I'm horrified because I'm like, God, did we ever learn?
Mm-hmm. Well, Abraham Lincoln learned, didn't he, Brad? Because he realized the power of the press, and he realized the power of public opinion, and that if public opinion was against him, he wasn't going to be able to smoothly move through anything. And so one of his strong attributes was that he learned how to manipulate people, really, including the press.
Yeah, and listen, I think even when you look at the passage of the Emancipation Proclamation, you know, we love to think of Abraham Lincoln as, you know, the shining beacon, perfect in every way man, but he was no dummy. He was very smart and knew how to pass and get what he wants, even if he has to barter, trade, steal, whatever it might be. And that's not, that doesn't mean he's a bad person either. It just means he's, again, a human being. And one of the things, you know, that he's fighting in the midst of all this is this venomous hatred. And I know it sounds naive to say, but I was struck by just how divided the country was in the Civil War. And again, that sounds naive, but it's one thing that, you know, we're fighting. I know it's brother against brother. I know that there's a war on, you know, one of the most horrible we've ever had. But the level of venomous hatred, it's one thing to hate the other side. It's another to want them dead.
Yeah, just blind. So it's blind hatred. Yeah. Out of control.
I will say, when we were doing the book, there's that scene in the beginning where you see Senator Charles Sumner is giving a speech on the Senate floor, and then a couple of days later he's talking about, you know, how slavery is wrong, and a couple of days later he's on the Senate and he's sitting in his chair, and a sitting congressman walks into the Senate, and he's got a wooden cane with a metal tip on top, and he basically picks his cane up and says to the senator, you know, you one of my relatives, you besmirched his honor in your speech yesterday, or whatever it was, and he picks up his cane and starts hitting over the head Senator Sumner, and then hits him again and again and again and again, over and over and over, to a bloody pulp, you know, and his goons are kind of holding everyone back. And, you know, this is a sitting congressman physically beating a sitting senator on the Senate floor in the United States, you know, Senate.
Right.
And you're like, you think we hate each other now? Like, it was staggering to me to see that level of just, you know, bile from one to the other.
It was for me too, because I did not know very much. Obviously, I didn't grow up here. I didn't know very much about the Civil War. I didn't really understand why it happened. And you do talk about this a lot in the book. But, you know, the heart of everything with, you know, of course he wasn't perfect, but Abraham Lincoln, at the heart of everything, wanted to unify and unite. And he never appealed just to his base and the people who did support him. He knew he had to bring that country together. And I think that's a big, big takeaway from your book.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I mean, and it goes back to that same line we talked about, right? You got to reach for the light.
Yeah.
And I think that, there, you know, one of the things we try to deal with, and this is probably actually a good place for us to, you know, kind of, as I see the time, we're starting to wrap it up, but I think it's the perfect place, is one of the things we talk about in the book is, what happens if there's no Abraham Lincoln? What happens if this plot actually worked? What happens if he's killed before the Civil War really kicks into full steam? And, you know, the vice president at the time was a guy named Hannibal Hamlin. Hannibal Hamlin sounds like he's the next Avengers villain in the next Marvel movie, right? I mean, but does Hannibal Hamlin, is he better than Abraham Lincoln? Does he rise to an occasion and take us to even better places? Maybe, maybe not. But I think what strikes me is, if you take away Abraham Lincoln, the one thing that I guarantee changes is that the story of Abraham Lincoln, that boy who comes from nothing, who's dirt poor, who's learning the alphabet by writing in the dirt with a stick, and rises to the highest office in the land, that isn't just the story of our 16th president. That's the story of the American dream itself. And when you take that away, you know, we profoundly change how we think of ourselves. And I think that's what really struck me, is how ingrained Abraham Lincoln's ideals are in just the concept of America, and how we, you know, we're a country founded on legends and myths, and the legends and myths we love most are our own.
Yeah.
And that's what really struck me, is, you know, in all this reaching for the light, how much that kind of infiltrates the way we think about ourselves and what our hopes and dreams are. And that's what all heroes do. They try to tell you who not who you are, but who you can be.
Who you can be, and that's what we need to keep in front of us right now. Brad Meltzer, it's always such a pleasure talking with you. I know listeners can find out much more about you and your work at bradmeltzer.com and your co-author at joshmensch.com. And the book is called The Lincoln Conspiracy, The Secret Plot to Kill America's 16th President and Why It Failed. Final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
You know, I just hope you think, when you think of yourself, you don't have to be Abraham Lincoln, right? You just have to be yourself. But the one thing you do have to do is you do have to reach for the light. So I really, really encourage you. I know it's hard right now. I know we, all of us, are kind of frustrated by the political discourse that we live in. But I do feel that the only way you change the world is you got to change yourself. So, you know, be better than what angers you. That's what I leave you with. Be better than what angers you.
Perfect. Perfect. Thank you so much, Brad Meltzer. Appreciate it always.
Such a pleasure.
And if you have questions or comments on today's show, you can find us at conversationslive.net. I want to thank each of you for joining us today. Until next week, live well, live strong.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicki's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversationslive.net. That's conversationslive.net today.